This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
Now ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Yes. Let's make sacred pact. I promise teach karate, that to my part. You promise learn. I say you do, no question, that to your part. Deal?
Steal?
Yes. First wash all the car, then wax.
Wax. But what do I have to wash all the car?
Remember, deal. No question.
Yeah, but
Wax on, right hand. Wax off, left hand. Wax on, wax off. Breathe in through nose, out the mouth. Wax on, wax off.
Hello, everybody. You are listening to Popcorn Culture. I'm Lee Chui Lin, joined by my fellow dojo members, Sharmila Ganesan and Arvind Yuvaraj. We're really excited. We have an all-80s extravaganza this week, culminating in our supercut and starting off with our throwback, because we're going back to 1984 and Karate Kid.
I actually don't know how I'm so excited about Karate Kid, because I was like one when it came out. But I think it's all of the rewatches on RTM and just how much so many scenes from that film have gone into pop culture, memeability. I don't know, you know, the crane kick, the wax on, wax off, right? At a certain point in time, if you weren't a Karate Kid fan, I don't know what you were watching on TV.
I also think we kind of underestimate like just how much this movie perpetuated the whole, like, you know, underdog learns from retired fighter, or underdog learns from secret karate guy who happens to be a maintenance person as well. That trope, you know, because like Rocky started it it started it about 8 years before this movie did it, before Karate Kid did it. And then it took the same concept and tried to do it again. And it did it really, really well. And I think when people try to redo these films, they're either trying to copy one of those movies, they forget like Karate Kid did it, and also did it so well that it kind of stopped everyone else from doing it after that, in a way.
So I love that you bring up Rocky, because this was actually directed by John G. Avildsen, who is the same person who directed Rocky. So there is a very strong through line there. And I also wanted to bring that up, because in case it is not clear, we are talking about Karate Kid, the original, not Karate Kid, the one that we're just not going to mention anymore, you know, subsequently.
Jaden Smith, and that's it.
Yes, the 2010 one. So yes, aside from the memeability, aside from everything else, the story is very, very simple, right? You have a boy, Daniel LaRusso, who moves from New York out to California with his mom, and in so doing, meets a girl, meets a bunch of bullies who all belong to a dojo called Cobra Kai. We'll get to that. And also meets a nice handyman who happens to work in his apartment, who also happens to know karate, and ultimately participates in a tournament.
That's pretty much the frame of the film. I think what tends to happen with movies like these over time is that the tropiness of many things becomes set in stone, right? So, and you tend to remember them in a certain way. You tend to remember certain scenes. But I think the great joy of rewatching these movies is that you realize that some of those things are not entirely accurate. In rewatching it this time, I really realized that, you know, despite that underdog frame, there's so much in this film that is so natural, that often feels like a character drama. You know, the way that people talk to each other, the way characters relate and grow and move throughout the film. And honestly, the karate-ness of the film is, I'd say, just about a third of it. The rest of it is really about friendships and growing up and getting close and building relationships, which actually honestly blew my mind a little bit.
You also have to admire it for the foresight, right? I mean, they throughout this movie, they introduce characters as if they knew that they were going to be legendary. Like even the first time you see like Mr. Miyagi, the way he shows up in the film or the way he corrects Daniel LaRusso for calling him Mr. Miyagi. It's like they knew the film had pop culture relevance even when it didn't have pop culture relevance, which you have to... I mean, you have to give them a pat on the back, love, for thinking that far ahead. You know, they knew that this would be a hit. And it wasn't even supposed to be a hit. It was a sleeper hit that year. But just, I guess, like designing it in a way like, you know, if this becomes popular, these characters are going to go on to become like fan favorites for like a long, long time.
So there's so much I love about this movie. I loved it. I have not actually rewatched it since I was a kid, I think. And so my relationship with it over the years has really very much become that of the meme. If you say wax on, wax off, I know what you mean. I can do the crane kick pose as well as the next person. Show me a stump on a beach, I'll hop on it. But over time, that's what it's become to me, the final tournament, all the rest of it. But I didn't realize what joy and what like real heart joy I would feel watching this film. It felt so good to rewatch. It was sweet, it was wholesome, it was well acted, it was well crafted, it was well written. The ways in which the characters interact with each other and build chemistry with one another was so sweet and really heartfelt. And I think the fact that you can believe that Daniel LaRusso and Mr. Miyagi would form that relationship, and that you believe that these two are friends and they're going to be friends for life, and you are watching that formation of a friendship. The fact that you believe that means that when Miyagi says, you know, it's not really about the karate, win or don't win, whatever, you believe that. And yet, when it finally comes down to the karate, by the end, I was yelling at the TV and fist pumping and like, finish him with the best of them.
I think everything that you just said, there's so many aspects that we could talk about, but I wanted to maybe start off with the performances, right? Because that's really at the heart of so much of what works in this film. Ralph Macchio as Daniel and Pat Morita as Mr. Miyagi. Pat Morita actually got an Academy Award nomination for his role. And there's so much to love about their relationship. You know, I love that when they start, it has nothing to do with karate. In fact, it's a simple act of kindness. Pat Morita's the handyman. Daniel's just gotten beaten up by some of the kids in his school. And he just reaches out as a normal person who just wants to do something nice for somebody else. And I really loved that. And I realized in the second watch, some of my favorite scenes or the scenes that stuck with me and that really show the kinds of performance that you get here. There's this scene where Mr. Miyagi gives Daniel a car for his birthday, one of his old cars. And the Ralph Macchio's expression, his look of surprise and this almost tentative, like, what, really? You're doing this for me? It's such a beautifully played scene. And despite the iconic scenes that have stuck with me over the, you know, last couple of decades, this time around, I felt myself appreciating those scenes, because I think that's actually what gets you believing that you want these people to make it and make it to the end of the film.
But at the same time, they don't do the, you know, falling into the stereotype or the bombastic role, which they could have easily done. He is a sensei from Asia, so the movie could have very easily stereotyped him into a certain kind of character, which they didn't do. At the same time, they could have made the Cobra Kai's those stereotypical bullies, which they are, but they're also kind of not, because they're disciplined bullies and they're bullies that believe in something. And they could have made the your lead protagonist, Daniel, like a kind of lead protagonist, which they also don't do. So it's very tame, the movie is. Like, just going back and comparing it to Rocky again. Rocky is very bombastic. Like, Sylvester Stallone is out there. There's no one in this movie that's as out there as anyone in the Rocky films.
No, and I don't think it's that kind of film, right? It's actually quite slow. So when I went back in, I was surprised by the duration of the film. I thought that it was going to be 90 minutes, and instead it's 120. So you have that extra half hour of story, and actually most of that is spent in the friendship. Most of that is spent in exactly the moments like where he gets the car, Or for that matter, with him falling in love with Ali, who is, of course, the ex-girlfriend of Johnny Lawrence, who is the head bully. And just while we're talking about the relationships or while we're talking about the performances, aside from the lead two, right, I loved Elizabeth Shue. The last time we spoke about Elizabeth Shue on the show was for Leaving Las Vegas. And so I was just happy to see her, you know, healthy. But also, it's very sweet, right? Fundamentally, the movie is sweet, and that sweetness comes out in the ways in which it takes its time. It could have gone from fight scene to fight scene to fight scene. It could have gone with an escalation of the bullying. It could have gone with a Rocky training montage, which it thankfully never kind of gives into that to do. And instead, it takes its time with people hanging out at the arcade, people hanging out in school, people exchanging, people trimming little trees and learning how to pronounce them correctly. You know, there are all these little moments in the movie that make it sweet, that take its time, and that ultimately leads to a more, I think, satisfying experience when you watch it.
I think it's really telling that the training sequence and or montage that we do get in this film is so much in line with the Mr. Miyagi ethos, right? It's against these beautiful, calm lakes and beaches. You know, there's this sense of like zen in what you're watching. It's much more about them understanding each other than it is about like pumping music in the background and running from place to place. And I like that. And I think that kind of sets the tone for what kind of movie we're watching and what kind of, I think, where the heart of the movie is.
Speaking of tone, though, did you guys feel like the ending was very abrupt this time around when you watched it? Because I felt that. I kind of forgot that movies ended this way, and a lot of movies end this way, especially in the 80s. So when it happened, I was like, whoa. Like,
well,
that's
I was
it.
Crying and cheering at the same time, so I think I was fine.
Fair enough.
It felt sudden, but I was just happy to see where it ended. I was just like, yes, yes.
And the frame that it ends on, it's perfect.
It is perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect is the word for this movie. We're talking about 1984's Karate Kid. In light of the fact that we're spending the whole week talking about the 80s, tomorrow we're going to be talking about Cobra Kai. Let us know, do you love Karate Kid? Do you remember watching it when it first came out? Have you rewatched it recently? If not, we would all roundly recommend it. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Best flipping moments. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, you are listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Arvin and Sharmila. Together we are talking, or rather throwing back to Karate Kid. And so we've talked quite a bit about the performances and about the story. I wanted to talk about the memeability and whether or not you guys think sometimes it harms a movie when it gets remembered this way. So for me, I don't think it does for Karate Kid in particular, because the things that have passed into meme culture aren't out of the ordinary for the film. They're actually, you know, quite interwoven into the fabric of the story. But I think a lot of 80s films have not been so lucky.
It doesn't bother me with this film either. And in fact, for me, when those moments came, the moments I remember from my childhood, the moments I remember imitating, it was very exciting. I wonder, though, whether those moments, to someone who hasn't watched the film, whether they will be disappointed when they actually watch the film. Not because it's not a good film. I actually think it's a great film and a better film than what we remember it to be. Mm-hmm. But I think they may not expect this film.
I think they'll be pleasantly surprised, because the memes, if you look at the memes that have come out from the film, they don't actually talk about anything in the film. So they're basically just pictures with words that don't make much sense. So I think if anyone hasn't seen Karate Kid and they've only seen the memes and they go back and watch Karate Kid, one, they're going to be satisfied because it's a meme movie, yay. But also because it's a good movie as a whole. And I think that helps. I think when the meme doesn't connect so much to the film and then you watch the film and it's a completely different thing, that helps a lot.
I get the sense that we're all a little bit surprised by how good the movie is. And that's odd, because when we were talking about reviewing this movie, all three of us were actually really excited and we were prepared to do it. But fine, I won't speak for the two of you. But for me, I was surprised by how good it is. I've been told over and over it's good. I know it should probably be in order to have survived this long, to have spawned off the franchise that it did. And yet somehow in rewatching it, there was something about it that was surprising to me in terms of how gentle it is. And in fact, how small the story is. It's not as if the tournament is nationwide. The tournament is the All Valley tournament. It really just is about the valley. Yeah. And it's a big deal to everybody there. But it's more of a community film, it feels like, than it is about the kinds of movies we get now, where everything has to involve, at the very least, a municipality or a city. You know,
it's never the world.
Correct. It's never really just about the neighborhood and one high school and one boy trying to find balance in his life. And I think I appreciated the intimacy of the story, and that surprised me.
So I think what surprised me was that, you know, there are things you love from your childhood that you're often afraid to revisit because you think as an adult, you'll not find it that great. So maybe that was the surprise for me, that not only did I still enjoy those things, but that I found new things as an adult to enjoy about this film that I maybe wouldn't have picked up on as a kid. Mr. Miyagi's entire backstory, for instance, it's so subtly brought out to the point where I think I must have missed a lot of it when I was a child. I knew he had a sad child, you know, sad background. I knew he had lost his family, things like that. But what that actually means, who he was, you know, his history in America, a lot of that, I think, helped me, I think, pull myself away from even fears of like, is this movie orientalist? Is this kind of, has it lost its sell-by date? No, because when I rewatch it, I find that this movie might actually do it better than a lot of more modern films.
Yeah. So my expectations, not my expectations, like the same like you guys. I remember this film for being like cheesy and over the top and just very 80s. And that's all I was expecting. I was expecting cheesy 80s schlock. And I would have been happy if that was it. But it wasn't. It was like a very subtle, kind of a slow burn. You know, it takes its time. It's about 2 hours and 6 minutes, which is very long for a movie like this. Normally, it ends in about an hour and a half. So I was surprised by all of that. And even like going back to what I said before about the stereotypes and not falling into its own traps. A lot of things about this movie surprised me the second time around. And I didn't expect it to do any of that.
Yeah. I think on that note about the Asian-ness of it, right? Pat Morita did speak about how he patterned his accent after his uncle's, I believe. And the story of The Karate Kid was actually based in part on the screenwriter's real experiences. So the movie was written by Robert Mark Kamen, and he based some of it on his own experiences as a karate kid. And so I think that it's those things that ground it. And it's the fact that the writer actually petitioned for Pat Morita to be involved, right? He wanted that sense of accuracy. He wanted that sense of representation. And I mean, on the one hand, it's a little bit disheartening that 40 years on, 30 odd years on, we are still having these conversations about inclusion. But it's heartening to know that 40 years ago, there was still this push to ensure that it was there. And I think that Pat Morita's comedic background also plays in really well to making Mr. Miyagi who he is, because so much of the humor and the fun of that character comes out in the timing of the exchanges. And I think that that comes from having a comedic background.
Oh, 100%. I think when we talk about inclusion, it's actually about when characters are not stereotypes, they need to be human. And Pat Morita, casting Pat Morita makes that character so human because he moves and talks like a real person. Even when his lines are not necessarily to sort of too deep. They can feel a little on the nose sometimes, but the way he delivers them with a sort of a nudge and a wink or a little bit of just the amount of pathos you need, I think that carries through so much of the film. I wanted to say also that the way they build these characters, Irene, and you touched on how they don't make the bullies the stereotypes, for instance. So I love the scenes in the tournament. Again, things that I'd forgotten, where you see the so-called bad guys and how they react when they do something that they know is wrong, or you know, when one of them loses and their response, and you realize how much thought has been put into making these characters incredibly real humans with real feelings and not black and white bad guys, good guys.
They're kids. I think the movie allows them to be kids who are really caught up in karate for some reason and who are really invested in this tournament. And I love that. I also wanted, in that vein of talking about kids, I wanted to talk about someone who was actually pretty much the only quote-unquote kid at the time that this movie was shot, and that was Billy Zabka. Who plays Johnny Lawrence. We've talked about all the main characters. Also, Daniel LaRusso's mom, I thought, put in a really sweet and warm performance. But Billy Zabka, for a time, was the quintessential 80s teen heartthrob villain. And rewatching this movie again, it's fascinating. He says like 5 lines.
Also, I remember him being much nastier than he actually is in the movie. So again, one of those things that how things solidify over time, right? In the film, he often just seems a bit lost and you know, he wants to win, yes, but he's also got a really, I don't know, he's got a very young boy side, which I don't remember.
He's jealous.
Yeah, pretty much.
And also, I hate to say this, but he's not one of the people that holds the movie up. Which is totally against everything that I remember. You can replace him with anyone else and the movie would still work, as opposed to Mr. Miyagi, which you cannot replace at all. But the villains in this film are so unvillain to a point that you could swap them out. And the movie still functions as well as it does. Which reminds me that I wanted to ask you guys, is Too Much Karate Kid a good thing? Because do you have any love for the sequels? Because I remember liking the second one. I can't remember the third one. And I completely forgot the next Karate Kid, which is with Hilary Swank.
I like the second one, but again, I don't remember too much of it. I'm not a big fan of any of the others. And, and the less said about the remake, quote unquote, the better.
My fear of rewatching Karate Kid because of the worry that it wouldn't be good has now extended to the sequels. So I don't know if I'm going to rewatch it anytime soon, but I will happily watch this movie over and over again. It made me really happy. And that's a nice setup point, actually, to talk about Cobra Kai, which is what we're going to be discussing tomorrow to find out whether Too Much Karate Adult is Too Much Karate Adult, because these people can't stop. Let us know, have you watched Karate Kid 1984, not 2010? Do you plan to watch it? What do you remember of it? You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. Write to us at movies@bfm.my.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.